Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
A few issues to talk about with our friend Rich Lankoff, the attorney at Bryce, Downey, and Lankoff. He's the co-host of the Legal Face-Off podcast on WGNradio.com and a frequent guest of this show. And if you go to one of the president's campaign rallies, you'll often hear that song. They sing, "You Can't Always Get What You Want." It's a great song. It's got a great vibe. It's got a great beat. Everybody loves the song. They crank it on the speakers.
It's kind of a weird campaign song, though.
But it's a weird campaign song because everybody sings there as they're rallying around their guy, "You Can't Always Get What You Want." You would think if the Rolling Stones had sang, "I'll Get You Everything You Want," that would have been the song. But they sing the very opposite of that. Good song. Anyway, so the Stones are suing the Trump campaign over the use of that song. Rich Lankoff's on the phone now. Hi, Rich. How are you? Good morning.
John, wild horses cannot keep me from your show this morning.
Are we going to embed the whole conversation with song titles now? Is that what you're going to do?
I'm going to do better. I'm going to do one of those old. You probably know the old that old radio show where they would intersperse songs with spoken word. I forget what it was, but you probably know what I mean. Where they used to throw in
like the
little clips.
They did the streak, right? Ray Stevens.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's right. That was a bit that you'd hear on rock and roll radio a lot in the like 1970s. But I haven't thought about that concept ever since.
Mr. Jaws.
That's right. Oh, God, yeah. Oh, wow. My mind is now going there, and it won't come back if I don't focus on the conversation. So haven't we had this conversation before, Attorney Rich Lankoff? This happens all the times with different political campaigns that take music that they don't have the rights to, and then the artists get upset, and then they stop using the music, right? That's what's going on here, isn't it?
Yeah, it happens all the time. One of the earliest and most famous cases, John, is when Springsteen told Ronald Reagan to stop using Born in the USA for his 1984 re-election campaign because he did not agree with Mr. Reagan's politics. Similarly, in this case, the Rolling Stones are telling Trump and, as you mentioned, are threatening to sue him over the use of several of their songs. So, you know, we see this all the time. Basically, there is a blanket license for use of many songs by ASCAP, which is the group that licenses such material. But an exception is if the artist, you know, common sense is that if the artist doesn't want to license a particular song, they could object and the campaign cannot use it. So that's what's happening here. We know Trump is no stranger to litigation, so I'm not sure if a threat of a lawsuit will dissuade him.
Well, it seems to me like there's some case law on this thing, and having worked at a radio station long enough, I know a little bit about ASCAP and BMI, the licensing fees. You don't own that music. If you have a public performance of the music, which that is, and by the way, this includes you playing music at your little restaurant. If you have a coffee shop and you're playing a radio station over there or your tape, and that is considered a public performance, it is quite literally of that music, but you don't own the rights to that. You have to pay rights to that. And if the BMI or ASCAP police, a friend of mine worked in this business, sit down in your coffee shop and they hear the music and you don't have you are not paying a license to play the music, then you either have to stop and or you will be fined. I can't imagine that the campaign can't find another song. And to be honest with you, Rich, it seems to me like often this falls in the lap of Republican candidates because so much of rock and roll and popular music is performed by Democrats. Now, there's got to be some good country western songs out there, which maybe skews a little more to the middle and right that the campaign could use. But this does seem to sort of bite conservatives in the butt more than it does liberals.
Yeah, again, there's thousands, to your point, there's thousands of songs available in the ASCAP license agreement, and there are plenty of others for Trump to use. And I can't imagine, you know, too many Rolling Stones fans are in the Trump wing of political supporters. You
maybe
think of those people skewed the other way, but who knows? But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other songs that he has used and can use.
Well, I'm thinking, too, plenty of Rolling Stones fans are now white men in their 60s.
That's true.
The Rolling Stones in their 70s or 80s. So, but do you know the answer to this? Say the campaign still wants to use the song, and they will pay for the use of it. Can the Rolling Stones still keep them from using the music? I wonder if it's.
Yes,
are you
absolutely?
They can
absolutely. The artist has the right, as an assuming they're an ASCAP member, which you know most musicians are. The ASCAP member has the right to ask that their song be excluded from the campaign. Others who have done so with Trump are Neil Young, the estate of Tom Petty, and again the Rolling Stones. So absolutely, the artist has the ultimate right to request removal from the license.
So I was talking to a radio host from St. Louis, and we were talking about that couple that was waving their guns in front of their private property to ward off the Black Lives Matter protesters who had come into their gated community on their private road. The guy said, "This is akin to you being on my living room, and I'll hold this gun in front of you to protect myself and my property." I asked my friend down there if they have a castle doctrine and if that was sort of in application. What's your read on that? Can I point my gun at people? And what was going on there legally?
You can, generally. You hit the nail on the head with the castle doctrine. And the attorney, by the way, both individuals are personal injury attorneys down in Missouri, as you mentioned. The attorney is right. If he perceives, the question is ultimately whether his perception is reasonable. But Missouri has the castle doctrine, whereby if one perceives a risk to not only themselves but to their property, they have the right to defend themselves, including the use of deadly force. Now, of course, it's all a question of what's reasonable in the circumstance, and the attorney, the equivalent of the state's attorney in St. Louis, has said that they are going to look into prosecuting these two because, you know, that right is not absolute. It has to be reasonable. It doesn't have to be, again, a threat to your life. It could be a threat to your property. The concept being behind the castle doctrine is that your home is your castle. You have the right to defend it, including use of deadly force. The attorney was all over the media yesterday saying he did believe not only his property, but his life was in danger, that they were threatening his dogs. If you look at the video, though, John, it doesn't appear that that's the case. It does appear that they were trespassing, and it turns out that where they were, even though it might look like a sidewalk, was in fact private property. So they were trespassing, but they were certainly not threatening. And ultimately, I don't think, an allegation that their use or threatened use of force was reasonable will hold any water.
Wow. If this came to my court, I would tell everybody to get out of my court. I have no interest in passing judgment on this, which I guess would be a victory for the attorneys, for the couple with the guns. I do believe there are people in those circumstances who do feel threatened by the mob, by the crowd, by the protesters. Call them whatever you want. I'll call them protesters, but they see those people and they feel threatened. I'm not even judging whether or not these people are prejudiced. I'm just telling you, I believe that they felt that they were threatened. They were a lot of things: angry, armed, stupid, resentful. But I think they felt threatened. Why else were they out there? So they're waving their... But I mean, that whole thing strikes me as being kind of nebulous anyway, Rich. I mean, how can I judge the reasonableness of your emotions?
Yeah, that's always the key to that kind of question is, you know, you're not in the circumstance to a jury would have to place themselves in the shoes of these people if they do become defendants and decide what was reasonable at the time. And I think you're right. I think, you know, given that we saw a lot of protests that became, you know, riots, and maybe the protesters didn't, but there were some extra, you know, people out there rioting and looting, I think, in light of that, a jury might find that it was reasonable to brandish their weapons. I don't think it was a great look, right? I mean, we all are aware of how it looks for two older white people dressed in polo shirts, you know, in front of a huge mansion, brandishing an AK-47 or whatever that rifle was to a group of mostly minority protesters. So it's not a great look. But ultimately, I think you're right. I think that a jury could find that, given everything that's gone on over the last few weeks, that those actions were reasonable.
Well, and the other question is, maybe there should be some legal action against the people that broke into a private area beyond trespassing. Maybe mob action or some dang thing. I mean, can it go the other way on this, Rich?
Yeah. I mean, again, technically they were trespassing. There was, I think, a fence that was broken. Yep. That's what the property owners say.
Yeah, they said
that. So, you know, I think there was only about 10 people who stayed behind. The rest of them were marching on to the mayor's house or the mayor's office. So, you know, who knows? I don't think prosecutors will touch it, to be honest. It's too fraught with politics and emotion. I think they'll just let it go. But, yeah, I mean, there is the possibility that the people who remain behind would be prosecuted. But, again, I don't think any prosecutor would touch that at all.
Took a call last week from a police officer who said that the police department he is in is told, if you arrive on a scene and people are illegally shooting fireworks, just drive away. We don't want this hassle. And we're probably going to get a ton of that this weekend, starting tonight. Not that we haven't already. For weeks now, people have been shooting fireworks off around the country, and Chicago's no exception to that. What are you thinking about legally in all of these stories?
Well, as everyone knows, most fireworks are still illegal in our state. I think every year around this time you see legislation trying to change that and make our state like our neighboring states and make fireworks legal. But still in our state, there's a piece of legislation, you know, the Illinois Pyrotechnic Use Act. I'm sure most people don't know what that's called.
Nope.
But that does prohibit most, you know, private use of fireworks. To your point, we're seeing it more than ever. I think one report said there's a 1,500% spike in fireworks when everyone's home. I'm seeing them all over my neighborhood. So there's two sides to it that we covered in our podcast yesterday. On the one hand, you know, you want to, I think police are busy, obviously, with other things, and you don't want them worried about giving people tickets or arresting people for fireworks. On the other hand, the real issue is, you know, more than ever, you can't distinguish between a gunshot and fireworks. And unfortunately, this weekend, I think you're going to see another record number of shootings. If the last couple of weekends are any indication, it's going to be a rough weekend to be living in the city of Chicago. And I think people not knowing if they're dealing with gunshots or fireworks is pretty tough. So there's two sides to it. But for now, fireworks still remain illegal. That doesn't stop, of course, thousands or hundreds of thousands of people crossing the border to grab fireworks in our neighboring state.
Well, I think it's another instance where there's the laws and then there's the enforcement. And sometimes it just makes sense to not enforce the law because enforcing it is maybe creates more problems than the breaking of the law. And in some neighborhoods, that may be fireworks. I was thinking a little bit along those lines when I was watching what's happened in Seattle. The police have finally decided to break up that several block area where protesters have said, okay, this is our no police zone. It's a new community or, you know, whatever. And for a while, the cops didn't do anything. And then they just started grabbing people and hauling them out. And to be honest with you, I support both actions. I've seen so many instances where the police say, that's breaking the law, and therefore we are going to now stop you from breaking the law. And the midterm, long-term, short-term consequences of that can be catastrophic. So if you want to play softball with that scene in Seattle, I understand the sense of that. And then at some point you say, okay, enough is enough, and you move in. But that happens all the time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what's important to point out is a fact put forth by our friend Mary Vandeveld, who was on our Legal Face-Off podcast just yesterday, who pointed out that for all the hype the fireworks injuries get, the amount of fireworks, you know, injuries per year are actually far less than most other routine injuries like slip and falls or other things. So, you know, they get a lot of hype around this time of year, but I think in the grand scheme of things, the police are probably right to look the other way generally on these cases, to your point.
Mike, I had a question for us. Mike, you're on WGN. What's on your mind? Hey, Mike. Yeah, Mike's gone. The Supreme Court, by the way, Rich Lenkoff, has also been making news for a variety of reasons, a ruling about abortion in, Louisiana, but also people just paying attention to how the Supreme Court is ruling on things. And it's not always, though it is a conservative court and it's a conservative president, it's not always going in their favor. What are you thinking, reading, and hearing about all of this?
Well, really, yeah, really interesting times around the end of June, beginning of July, when the Supreme Court, announces the most important cases. And the last couple of weeks have had cases, one involving LGBTQ rights, and also the one that was announced Monday of this week involving abortion, surprised a lot of people because of who was in the majority. In the abortion case, Chief Justice John Roberts, who is generally a bedrock conservative appointed by a conservative president, voted in favor of overturning the Louisiana law. In other words, voted in favor of a woman's right to seek abortion. That was surprising to many, although if you understand Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts' background, you understand how much he values precedence, this concept of stare decisis. And in this abortion case, he said that the Louisiana case was very similar to the Texas case from a couple of years ago. Therefore, he wasn't going to overturn it. In the gay rights case, Neil Gorsuch, who was the first appointee by President Trump, again a very seemingly conservative justice, voted in the majority in that case, surprising a lot of conservatives. So, long story short, John, it underlines the idea that you never know what you're going to get with a justice once they're on the Supreme Court, and that's probably a good thing.
I guess so. I mean, it only takes one to break ranks and vote conservative or vote liberal, depending on what their party is or the party of the president that appointed them. I remember when John Roberts, not testified, but when he made his sort of introduction to the Senate. I don't even know what you call that. What is that?
Confirmation.
Confirmation hearing. So he's sitting there, and I was charmed by the guy and his family and his backstory and his, well, if I'm hearing you in my ears, I don't know if you're on the air when you do that. So I just thought he was a guy whose politics maybe weren't my own, but seemed very smart, very conscientious. And I thought, okay, then he ought to be a Supreme Court justice. He ought to have the right to serve because he just seemed to be sufficiently knowledgeable of the Constitution. And I thought his integrity and his intelligence and everything else was on a standard that I would like to see if it were my guy. So I was not resistant to John Roberts being on the Supreme Court. Right. I mean, that's, I think, the way everybody on either party should view any candidate. Not do they have your politics, but do you think they can intelligently and fairly interpret the Constitution? And I thought yes.
That's what you want, ideally, from a Supreme Court justice that is supposed to be bipartisan, that's supposed to be, he's appointed for life, so he's there for a while. So you don't want someone who is going to just vote for the party that put him in power or on the bench. Chief Justice Roberts, I think, has proven to be that way, although he has, if you look at his voting record, he's certainly not a liberal. He certainly has consistently been a conservative, probably, 85% of the time.
Yeah, sure.
But there are cases like this where, to his credit, he does, in this case, he said, to rule any other way, because the cases are so similar, would not be consistent with the concept that once something is decided, it's decided. That's literally what stare decisis means. And that for predictability, for transparency, we have to follow precedents. Of course, every justice says that, every judge says that, and most of them pick and choose, when they follow stare decisis. But Justice Roberts really, I think, in this case, followed what we thought he would follow in his confirmation hearing with regards to legal precedent. So that's a good thing.
Rich Lankoff's the attorney at Bryce Downey & Lankoff, co-host of our Legal Face-Off. You hear it often with the likes of a me or a Mary Vanderveld chiming in a little bit. What's the best thing on your menu this weekend, Rich Lankoff?
Well, I am looking forward to, John, doing very little this weekend, actually. I was going to, we do have a tradition in my alley, in my neighborhood here in on the north side of lighting off some fireworks. This year, we decided not to do so because last year, one of them went sideways and went under the SUV of one of my neighbors. So I decided this year, let's avoid blowing up an Escalade, and let's just maybe watch other people do fireworks.
Oh, so there you go. There you go.
We'll be taking it easy on the 4th.
Yeah. Well, then, have a good weekend. Be safe, and we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks, Rich.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yeah, Rich Lankoff from Bryce Downey and Lankoff does a podcast for us here.